PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is my good buddy, Mr. James Miles. You can find his madness over there at the Hackers Paradise homepage. Crazy articles going on right now, including a fairly recent one on a little bit of Srixon action that's out there that we will be talking about today, so I don't want to divulge too much. Either way, James, welcome back.
Well, hi. It's good to be here again.
Yeah, we got a little late night session going on here. Make sure we got a Friday show for you guys. Lots going on in our world. How's your golf game?
Absolutely atrocious.
Okay.
I mean, it's about as bad as it's been in like 4 or 5 years. So
really?
Yeah. It's just a combination of not playing and still reprogramming my brain for whenever I hurt myself this year and I had to take a break for a while and all that stuff. So I'm ready for the kids to be back in school so I can actually go play.
Your morning sessions and everything's right 8, in the world.
My good old 8 a.m. tea times, you know.
Yeah. Well, we just got an email from the course, your course, showing some pictures from the member guests that I participated in, which was super fun. Mm-hmm. Brought back a lot of memories. You know, I think I'm coming around on a lot of this stuff. I used to not put a ton of value in it, but like having those memories, having those times where you can go and just whatever happens, happens. We happen to play pretty well for the week, but you know, the idea that you can go and make that memory and then have it. I sent you a picture that I found of you and me, and we both look reasonably happy and sober enough in it. So that was pretty good. Yeah. I think, I don't know, maybe a good PSA for people out there. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. What could it hurt? You may as well have a little fun and see how things go. And regardless of what tournament or event you're looking at doing.
I mean, it's the easiest way that I've found to kind of let go in golf is that I know most of these things are always going to be like chaotic. So I try not to get upset. We got a little upset with the member guests, but that's a whole other story. But that was only at the end. The rest of it was, I don't know. It was a fun moment, like to go just have fun and understand that, like, if you play great, cool. If you don't play great, cool. It's still good company. The weather was wet, but it was still a good time. So I've kind of tried to take all that with me in everything I do, as far as even in like charity scramble tournaments and stuff. There's one coming up for the hospital my wife works for. The women's clinic's going to have a team. And usually I play with a bunch of buddies that are really good. And this year I'm going to play with some of the docs and just have fun. So like they're leaning on me, which is a really bad decision for them. But it's just going to be a good time. So it's a good state of mind to be in with it all. Cause I take care of all the other stuff way too seriously anyway. So it's nice to go do those things and just kind of kick back and have fun. The pictures were good. You know, it was right before we were completely and totally soaked.
Yeah. I do appreciate how completely and utterly unphotogenic I am. The fact that this podcast has somehow made it to video is a testament to other people, not myself. So it always makes me laugh. I'm like, oh God, what do I look like this stupid photo? So that was pretty fun to see that. And it just brings a flood of memories back. I am curious, how are our boys doing? We had a couple of buddies who we played pre-rounds with, and I don't think they quite had the result they were looking for in the main event, but have they recovered yet? Is the hangover done?
I've not heard from them very much after I sent them a picture of the scorecard. the big one that we, as Dan and I won our flight, we won the A flight, and our buddies were in there, and they did not fare so well at all.
If low score would have won, they'd have killed it. Yeah,
I may have sent him a picture of that, but no, it's crazy season right now for both those dudes. So I haven't seen them a whole lot. They're out working in the field and stuff. So
let me ask you this: it's been a really strange year for Ohio with weather and temperature control specifically, and then just really inconvenient precipitation. We've had huge rain flows at like the worst possible time, followed by a ton of heat. And we've had to deal. I'll let you tell me what's going on over there in Oklahoma, but we've the courses are stressed here big time.
Today was our hottest day that we've had. I think we hit 103 today, which in the past like several
actual
years,
or feels like
actual.
Oh God.
Yeah. So, and that's it, but it's kind of needed because we've had, I mean, when you were here at the beginning of June, we got a lot of rain, and we'd had rain the weeks leading up to that. We had more this year. It basically got all of our lakes out of low water phases. So we got out of a drought for the first time, and I don't know how long. But then the problem is it heats up here. We get just stupid humidity. So everything and everybody struggles. The courses, my course at least, has done really well with it. And it's handled it better than what I thought it would have. But we're kind of at that point now in these next 2 or 3 weeks where everything's going to stress a lot. Ironically, we were 102 today. We're going to be 82 tomorrow.
Yeah, that's so, going around. It's going to be pretty nice for this weekend. It's actually my my member this weekend. So I hit the range today. I'll hit the range tomorrow and act like I'm good at golf for a couple days. And you know, hopefully I don't let my buddy down, since there's a lot of monetary investment in this one with the Calcutta. And yeah, I'm just going to try and have a little fun. So the temperatures here have been brutal. I mean, it's not necessarily an outrageously hot summer. It's just been sort of unrelenting. It's like whatever the problem is, it's magnified by things that don't go well with it. So we had an extreme amount of rainfall with extreme amount of heat, but it wasn't like it rains all day. So you get the cloud cover and a little bit of reprieve for the golf course. It's like it rains a shit ton for about 30 minutes, and then it's bright and sunny for the rest of the day and 90 plus. And so it's
miserable.
Like,
yep.
The problem with that and the problem with clay-based soil here is there's not a lot of room for error dealing with the type of grass we have. So the water sits on top, and then it gets this like black fungus growing on it. And then all the drain lines where it sits in, they just inevitably burn out. And I feel terrible for my superintendent because he does a tremendous job. His team does an unbelievable job with the soil they deal with and the conditions. It seems like every year there's a challenge, and this year it is this just extreme level of heat with flash amounts of rain. And we are 100% dealing with it right now. And I feel terrible, man. Like, I read a lot of stuff and I see a lot of complaints about the course not being in the condition you expect and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like agronomy in total, like there is a level of a razor's edge that they deal with. And sure, there are plenty of courses out there that have a ton of money and can put whatever they want at it. But the regular golf courses out there, I mean, you pretty much have to buckle up and hope for the best in these times, and I feel like we are sort of dealing with that right now.
Yep. It's a lot of the, I've got one kind of local on the way, you've seen it. It's our public course, our big public course in town, and I've noticed over the last week and a half everything's gone from green to it's that in between, because you know they don't, it's a city course, they don't have the water supply that other places do. Like even my course, we're blessed with the water supply we have, but everything teeters on what is this string of stuff you're going to get. And like today hitting 103, like last couple years, this has been the time of year where we have like, usually it's 10 or 15 days of that. And I can't fathom being a golf course superintendent at a course that does not just, you know, not doesn't have everything at their fingertips. And trying to just survive it. And the same thing happens here with our winters, you know, because we don't close. We don't really shut down. Usually we can get away with a couple rounds in there, but then you hit those sub-zeros. And when you were here, you saw the leftover of the winter kill that we dealt with. So I don't know, man. I used to think whenever I was a college kid and I was going to school about how cool it would be to be a golf course superintendent. And the older I am now, I'm like, hell no, man. The stress and like the BS you deal with, because you're right. There's always a group that are like, well, I remember when it was like this. And like, it's year to year. It's month to month. Hell, it's week to week.
Yeah, the amazing thing to me is how little you can do once you get it to a certain point. I mean, you can create root depth. I understand that. You can put down sand on greens to help the air get through them a little bit better and firm them up a little bit, which helps a lot. But dude, dealing with bent grass and dealing with heat and then like extremes, I feel like bent is like the first grass. It's just like, nah.
stressed, like just on a whim, it gets stressed.
Yeah. And you know, I see the little things they do and I feel so badly because they're like these last ditch attempts to maintain some of the corsets inevitably going to deal with the challenging summer that we've had. But it's like, man, I just wish there was a greater reward for them than what inevitably happens when you can't control the weather. I feel terrible.
Yeah, because everybody's always going to pick out the negative of it, not what you manage to keep, what you manage to save. And expectations are good. Like when you're in a place like that, in a course like that, to be able to have those expectations are cool because you know it's a well taken care of track. But still, it's like it's the most unrelenting, unceremonious position to be in. Like you're just if it looks great, it's supposed to, and if something happens and Mother Nature comes up and bites you in the butt, it's your fault. And
that's the real one. If it looks good, you did your job. If it looks like shit, you suck at your job. It's like you're forgetting like a really big component of that you have no control over. No matter how much water we put on it, it doesn't matter. Anyways, interesting topic enough, and I feel like this is pretty relevant to a lot of people listening because everyone deals with these spells of challenging weather. And I assume it's no different from a lot of places, and we get your leftover weather. So it'll be 80 here on the weekend. Thanks for that, by the way.
You're welcome.
It's worth talking about because we went through this real soft portion of the year and it's been a little bit drier over the last couple of days, and I'm actually really excited about that because it means I get to use a one iron all weekend and let the ball tumble down the fairway. I love the word trundle. Do you use that enough?
I don't think anybody uses that word enough.
How good is that word?
I think that's a great word.
Yeah, I was on the range with one of my dad's buddies earlier today, and he goes, "Let me see you hit driver." I'm like, "No."
Nah. No,
I'll hit a one iron for you. He goes, "You have a one iron?" I go, "Yeah, don't you?" Oh man. It's a frustrating thing, but doesn't matter. I wanted to talk to you about a couple things tonight, today, whatever we're gonna call this.
Whenever we are.
Session of madness. and I think the first one is kind of a big one in your world because you're a bit of a putter. Should I use the word? Yeah, slut on the.
I was going to go with whore, but that works too.
Okay. Same difference. Yeah, you're a big putter guy. And we've seen a really interesting trend where people latch on, and no company's free of criticism when it comes to this. They see a trend and they attack it with their best version of. And I'm fine with that. I feel like putters are inherently copied and it's a normal thing. I mean, a bladed iron looks like a bladed iron, so everyone inevitably copies the bladed iron and has their own spin on it. Putters, I think, is a little less obvious to get away with it, but no one's afraid to do it. And we also know that there's so much turnover in golf that, you know, what you say is a copy from someone, it could be the original designer doing it again for a different company, which
that's one of the things people don't realize. Yeah.
So, but in this case, we've seen this really massive takeover of the lab concept. And, you know, I'm not a fan of looking down at something as abhorrent as I think a number of their putter heads look like, and Vulcan death ship, whatever you want to call it. It's a real struggle for me. So that's something I probably won't be able to get away from. But what I can accept is they eliminate a lot of the failure in putting stroke. And I understand that. I agree with the goals. And I think a lot of other companies are not only agreeing with what they're trying to accomplish, they're putting their own spin on it. So I feel like we've had lots to talk about with lab, But most recently, and this is something you put up, is that Toulon came out with their version of not only the concept, but actually explored it quite a bit more. So tell me about them, man. What's the story in the new Toulon putters?
So the Formula putters, it's... We got to sit down with Toulon, and you were in on the call with us all, and we got to listen to Sean and Preston and everybody kind of give us the rundown. I didn't realize that there was the space there that exists, and that sounds really stupid to hear myself say. It sounds very confusing, but when the toe up zero torque balance putters really started to take hold, and you could sit there and argue with it's been done before. Odyssey did it. Whoever else did it. Axis One did it. Seymour had face balanced impact. All these companies. I don't care. I don't care who did it first. The reality is that Lab has been dominating with it, right? I mean, they moved to number three in putter sales, which is absolutely insane to think about. So everybody's going to take notice. You now get the attention of all the gorillas in the room. And that's kind of what happened. But Toulon being who they are, they view things a little bit different. And it was cool to hear them talk about the fact that they could have pressed one out immediately. They'd been messing with it and tinkering with it, and it was big and it's ugly by their standards, right? And it would have done and checked the boxes with it, but instead they thought there was more of a story, because whenever we have lived in a world of your putters being balanced and toe hang from 0 degrees to 90 degrees and everything in between, right? Like my current go-to putter is, you know, a plumber's neck mallet that has 20 degrees of toe hang. You know, it's in that realm of in between. It's not one or the other. But when you move to zero torque, in order to get the full zero torque effect that Lab does, it's -90 degrees toe up. Like basically that's what you get. -90 degrees is the way the putter's going to sit. And that's how everything is going to function. Toulon asks, what about the in-between from zero to -90? And that's where Formula comes in. So we have a 0 degree, basically center shafted. It's a little bit onset. And then you have a 45, and then you have the full 90. With the idea that some people that move to the zero torque putters really struggle with missing left. So the 45 kind of gives you an option in between for those. It may have been too extreme. Typically a lot of golfers miss right. And you can get some benefit from a zero torque putter and that concept if you can get out of your own way and just let the putter work. Toulon being who they are, right? It's not an ugly putter at all. It's actually a pretty cool mallet shape. I think they and TaylorMade have done it best right now. And I think that puts a company like Lab in an interesting spot. Even Odyssey, with the ones that they came out with their square to squares, it puts them in interesting spots, because now if you're going to start to have these options that aren't ugly, not like traditionally like, oh my God, ugly, but more tolerable, more palatable. I think it kind of changes the segment more, and it not muddies it, but competition gets a heck of a lot more fierce.
Yeah, I think the interesting point of this goes all the way back to the original mallet conversation, which is how many mallets have been face balanced over time, and it's so consistently there. And it wasn't until a couple versions came out where it's like, well, we're going to add a slant neck to this, or we're going to add something slightly different, like a plumber's neck, which I saw you start a forum thread on plumber's neck mallet. The idea that a mallet doesn't need to be face balanced, and people couldn't understand, well, why can't I make the, why can't I make a mallet work? It just doesn't feel right. I don't putt it right. I feel like I pull it a lot. The idea that toe hang doesn't have to be the exact same in a lot of these, and the willingness to explore that. I'm sort of on the other end of the spectrum where, you know, I use a blade putter that is nearly face balanced, but not quite face balanced. And I do that because I don't have a lot of arc in my stroke, but I also have a little bit of arc in my stroke. So the chance of me wanting to go straight back and straight through is pretty low. Well, in this decision by Toulon to create options for golfers, I think it was a really interesting one. I think it was one of two things that I think really is going to help them differentiate this for their storyline. First of all, it's options are king. And second of all, you've already made the point, but I'm going to say it again. Tuon has a level of boutique to them. Their consistency to make a good looking putter and not make one that looks like complete garbage, for lack of a better word, is, you know, something I think they take a lot of pride in. So for their ability to create this putter that looks fairly similar, other than the nearly straight line into the putter head, so the sort of centering of the shaft into the putter and thrown back a little bit, is what would differentiate it from a couple other heads in their line that have similar shaping. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shape that I know they talk a lot about creating a unique look for it that's still going to be high end. You get all the milling lines and all the radius, the radii, they're very attentive on those things. Like Sean and those, the origins of Tuon, when they first existed, that was the big premise of it all, right? And then the Odyssey collaboration happened. You still get a little bit of that. It's still a talking point, but now that we're back to Tuon Golf, its own entity, like, it's everything. That's why we get these small batch releases. That's why you get these things from them, is it's attention to detail. I mean, they're releasing these putters at $650 each. And that's if you don't go counterbalanced heavy model, and that's right in line with Lab. So it's not
Lab that high.
Once you get into custom shaft and you get into, which the upcharges and everything that come with it, it's really easy to get in that range. And then the turnarounds are going to be faster because of the way that Tuon operates. And now, are they going to sell thousands and thousands of them? No. Would they like to? Yes. But it gives them an option in that catalog. And the interesting thing is with the stroke, it's like you talk about with zero torque, the big thought is stop manipulating the putter and just let it go. So you're trying to let it go straight back, straight through, but some people have natural arc in it. That's why I've always drifted away from a zero torque putter eventually. Like, you go through a honeymoon phase, but then eventually it's just like, there's a feel issue for me is what I would describe it. Yes. And I'm a putter hoe. We get that, but that's always a big one. So to see like the 45 come in here, it gives you like, I can keep my putting stroke and not thinking about things. I don't know. I like the options. Bettinardi's bringing more right now. We've seen PXG get into it. Ping is messing around with it. I would not be shocked if we see Scotty come out with a model eventually of something that addresses that. Like, everybody is now in this segment because it has merit to it and people are interested. And if you are a putter maker and you're not doing something that people are interested in, whether it's a shape or whatever else, then you're getting left behind. And I think we're right in the thick of that right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because toe up is not a new concept. We've seen it before. If for whatever reason, the Lab takeover on it has created the hype required to get a lot of companies more involved in trying to solve it for their own end.
I think it's the way that they...
Why'd you look so pained by that when I said that?
It's because it's such an interesting thing. Like, yeah, toe up has existed, but the way they do it with the lie angle balance really is different than the way we've seen it before. Like, they have their own method. They have their own balance to it. And I know you're not saying it's the exact same. It's broad concept of it all, but that's one of the things that gets lost in the story. And I mean, we have people that throw out all the time, well, Odyssey did that. Well, Edel has a toe up putter too, or had a toe up putter, but it's not the same. It's not the same exact concept of it, just because the lie angle is the exact same. And I think Lab had a cool way of telling that story. I think they were upstart enough and against the grain enough that people grabbed a hold of it. And we've seen it happen with smaller iron brands and stuff, right? The question is, whenever you start to get big and you sell for $200 million, what are you going to do with your viewership, your usership? How's that going to affect the people that love and are diehard about you? And then they're also getting all these other options coming into the segment that are at more affordable prices in a lot of cases, and they can go to the store and get them. I don't know. It's a whole thing. You can get me going on this. I could talk for like an hour and a half on this crap.
I know. It's interesting because with the amount of replication, duplication, it's not like they have something wildly unique, and nothing is stopping any of the other companies from going after it. I kind of assumed that when they got put up for a sale, I kind of assumed that another company would just eat it up, you know, maybe a TaylorMade, because they've done that before. Adams Golf is online too. I really expected them to just take the concept and the name and just own the next 5 years worth of putter sales or whatever it might be. The fact that I don't think that happened is really surprising to me. And I wonder if that is a good thing or a bad thing for the brand overall.
I don't know. It makes me wonder, how much does the industry think this is a long-term style, right?
Mm.
Versus are they willing to sit back and wait? And is the private equity, do they think that it is going to be longer term? Or do they think within it's a 5-year trend, and I'm not saying it is, I think it'll last longer than that. I think we're going to have these options going forward. I just don't think they're going to be the headliner of any lineup, but I was surprised not to see like a PXG or somebody jump in.
And oh, interesting.
Because the counter, like, I don't want to say lab is counterculture. I don't want to say that. That's not the right way of phrasing it, but the shapes were so counter everything we've ever known from putters. Right. And the concept, like, to me, like, it fit with like a PXG, like someone stepping in like that, it kind of made sense. I thought maybe we'd see somebody get them and yeah, we would have a lab lineup within something, but now, I mean, you're sitting at number three and you've just sold, like, what's it going to be like going forward? Not only that, now that every other major OEM is going to, for the most part, have some version of what you do.
Yeah. So can you maintain this brand awareness that has been created, and what's your argument for continuing it, especially when, you know, putters being what they are, it's not like they're like a wildly common purchase. Once you have the one you like, let's assume you like it, well, you're not just going to go buy six more of them, right? But you can tell all your friends,
unless you're me.
You don't count, dude.
But no, it's true though. Like, it's, you want to be the disruptor. Until you are the disruptor and you've drawn the attention of everybody else in the room. And now you walk in the room and everyone is looking at you, including some of the greatest minds ever. Like, you have Sean Toulon, who has invented and like created some of the Mount Rushmore shapes. Like, you, when you get attention of those kind of guys, that's great for you. It's a feather in your cap, but now you can't just sit there and be the disruptor anymore and be counterculture when everybody else is now jumping into it. And you can sit there and say, they're copying us. Ping didn't do it with the answer. Everybody and their dogs copy that. Everybody and their dog has a seven now. Like, this is what putters do. And how are you going to survive it? I mean, I think they will, but I don't know that we're going to see the same levels of it. I hope I'm wrong. I love more putters.
Well, let me ask you the other side of it, because we've had full discussions on this in the past. But time's gone by, and I'm just curious. There was a massive wave in putter head covers. Some companies took off. Some have changed a little bit. Some are scattered all across your wall and sprinkled across mine. What's your take on the sort of boutique or secondary putter head cover storyline? Where do you stand on a lot of that right now?
It's plateaued. I think it's coming back to a level of I'll say accessibility that I kind of always thought it would. Like, it was so, and this is what I think is going to happen kind of in a similar vein. It was so counterculture and new and different and opposite of what we always just used regular OEM head covers, or maybe you had some one or two customs from your course, you know, AM&E and all these other companies that used to do stuff. Scotty was in the segment forever before it took off, but it was also hard to kind of crack into that. And it had I don't want to say a stigma, because that's not what it is, but it had it was held on a pedestal to an extent. And then the collection aspect of it happened and the counterculture aspect of it happened. And now you end up with a bunch of companies in on it. And you change your manufacturing methods, because if I'm a company and the demand is through the roof, I want to produce more too, right? Because I want to make more money, because that's what it's all about. And I think the same thing is kind of happening right now in the space of the zero torque thing. And I think it'll do just like what these have done. I would say many drivers in the past have done it. We see these things happen from time to time where everybody all of a sudden it feels like is making it, and then in a year or two it all kind of falls back to the median. And I don't think they're going away. I don't think the boutique head covers are going away now, obviously. But it's come back down to earth. I think it's actually probably a better correlation for discussion than what I thought it was whenever you brought it up.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one, because I mean, there Scotty was in a lot of ways the original untouchable when it comes to it. They had their designs, they had their way of doing it, and it didn't seem like a lot of companies were that eager to try and combat it. And then you had brands like Bettinardi who were not afraid to try and press on a little bit, and Swag obviously has had a significant impact on the, I think your point, counterculture concept, where they're going against the grain and doing flashy and crazy. But I also feel like there are companies out there that are doing it a little less flashy and leaning really hard on quality. Robert Mark is an example. Dormy is an example. We have this nice THP one from, is it Tremont?
Yep.
That, you know, the quality speaks louder than, you know, you've got pharaohs and skulls and stuff behind you like that. The quality is the bigger storyline here. So, you know, I'm really curious of course of your thoughts, but I'm really curious of what did the next 2 years look like from this? Do people still chase flash and crazy? And I'll admit, I still want an STFU one from the Masters, like that kind of stuff. But you know, that I'm just really curious to see how it shifts, because we've seen a shift already.
I think it's been interesting, because like even my course now is ordering custom covers that are made by other manufacturers. Like they never, Swag did a lot for a lot of courses, but some of the others have gotten into it, and they're not as flashy, but they are still there. I think you just have a baseline of the hatches and the swags, and there's a few others I would probably throw in there that are going to exist and continue to exist as being more readily available than they were initially when they were making 25 of a cover and people were going bat crap crazy over it. And then you're going to have these, I would say bespoke is a good way to put it, like Tremont and the ones that we did, like you, Jeremy on our staff and I at the PGA show, when we walked into that booth, it was like, I had a holy crap moment, because that was the first time I'd seen their stuff in hand. And it is bespoke. Like it is the highest quality you can get. It is every attention to detail. I think they take it to an even higher level. I mean, our previous putter conversation, you could compare it to what Toulon does and Bettinardi does, right? Like they're this next level of stuff. And I think that's where it's going to settle. I don't think they're going away anytime soon, because I think there's a new, I don't want to say generation, but grouping of people that want some color and some substance and some personalization on their clubs that doesn't involve, you know, ferrules and the more abstract work and club work that you have to do. It's easier to get a head cover and put it on there, and you can change it with the seasons. So we got guys at our course now that when we have 4th of July tournaments, their bag turns into like red, white, and blue everything. And it's hilarious, some of these guys that do it. So I think it's here to stay. I think it's just normalized. It's not as like all over the place as it was. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how companies react 2 years from now, 3 years from now to it. And why it's not been more impactful. I think Scotty is a really interesting example, because his putter head covers are, I don't want to be negative about it, but Velcro being what it is, soft leather being what it is, they are very quick to fall apart by design.
Wear's an issue. Yeah.
Wear and tear on those are very quick. Whereas there are some that I've had from, you know, EP or Swag or Bettinardi that have lasted seasons, where I wouldn't have that same level of expectation. The same goes for some other companies like piping on putter covers that last, you know, 3 weeks in a bag before they start peeling. And it's like, how are these companies not seeing that?
That's an interesting, I'm gonna cut you off because we get in that. You and I have had this conversation, and we've had guys in the room with us that used to work at some of the companies that we've had this conversation about. And you know, I think this segment existing now, I think companies need to make a decision. They either need to like really invest in it and do it right. And I would say TaylorMade right now is doing it right. Their cover releases and stuff that I would say Mizuno has done it right in the past year. Yeah. And now that's
interesting though.
That's manufacturer. Like they're going through EP and they're using some of these other manufacturers that have quality. But then on the other side of things, you have, you know, the Odysseys, who at one point they did graphics before anybody else did, before Swag took off, the No 3 Jacks and all that stuff. But the quality is terrible. So you release, you have to decide, are you going to release special edition covers just to say you're doing it for every major and every event? So you have something and the quality's not going to stand up. And are you going to be able to compete against like these higher level of quality and looking ones? And you're just living on your name. At what point is it worth even being in that grouping, or instead shifting to do a few special releases where you kind of collaborate with everything else? I know for big manufacturers, it's different because they have suppliers overseas where they get cost based on bulk and the amount purchased and everything else that goes with it. But quality is quality, and bad quality is bad quality, and good quality is good quality. So
yeah, it is funny how present the quality conversation is with head covers when in reality we're talking about a club company. But you mentioned Mizuno. That's a Mizuno. I think that's the winter one right there.
I've got the Scooby-Doo one they did. Yeah.
There you go. So the quality and it being EP is obviously, you know, related to the quality of EP. But I am a little bit surprised that companies haven't taken a deeper dive with it. We've seen some great collabs. I mean, Sirxon had incredible collabs this year with Dormy out of Nova Scotia.
Yeah, there's some really good ones.
I think actually Dormy might have a presence in Cali now, but anyways, they looked phenomenal for their major series. So we're definitely seeing more of it, but it's very limited. And I'm not even sure all of it's available to purchase. I'm not just referencing the Sirxon stuff, but I've seen
there's a lot of companies.
I'm a bit of an eBay guy when it comes to like Dormy head cover, and like, oh look, there's a TaylorMade logo on that I've never seen before. It's like, oh, it wouldn't that be nice if we had that?
Maybe that's the same way, like we circle back to whenever we were talking about the Zero Torque thing again, like our surprise that nobody scooping them up for whatever it was, whether it's cost or whatever else. I think a lot of that was people kind of sitting back, and companies aren't very quick to like wholesale change their attitudes on things. Golf as a whole is not quick to change their attitudes on things. So I think there's some of these major manufacturers that sit back and they're just like, it's a fad. Yeah. And but they can, because even if it's not a fad, it doesn't hurt their bottom line.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's a hell of a fad.
I obviously enjoy the fad.
Yeah. Rowback was a fad until everyone started doing it. Yeah, I really want to talk to you about your latest article, education piece on condensed forging. I think that was a really interesting article. I thought that when Casey was on the podcast, we had a lot of fun talking about it, and to see it in print, seeing a lot of great images. You know, people read articles for the pictures, so great job adding those in there.
Yeah, Jeremy did great there.
Yeah. But, you know, condensed forging is definitely worth a conversation. Seeing companies find different ways to do more with less. And when it comes to, you know, smaller profile irons, did that surprise you going through that and learning about their process and trying to change the way that feel is presented?
Well, it's kind of an interesting stack of things over the year for me, because, you know, I did an education zone piece on sound and feel in irons, you know, where we talked with Chris Oshaw a lot, and and the impacts of material versus geometry versus everything else. So you're kind of aware of that and you know their stance on it. But to get Strixon's side of it was, it was very educational in the sense of, I never thought of that. Like, our base wiring, whenever it comes to irons, are forged is softer, right? Which, yes, it is. And then if you want a softer material, you go from, you know, a specific type of carbon to another. You don't really think beyond that. And for Strixon, who's been very successful with their Z-series irons for how long now? I mean, we're going on a long time since, what, Z765s or whatever, we go way back to. And for them to still look at things as renowned as they are for the feel of those irons and go, we could do better. How do we do better? We can go softer. Well, I never would have thought about weakness zones, right? If we go to a softer material, do we have to treat the whole head or just or like making the hosel treated differently and using the condensed forging in order to move to a softer metal with the rest of the iron is one of the coolest things I think ever written about. Because it's so outside the box of but I don't know. Like, I mean, metallurgy is wild, and Strixon Cleveland's been on top of it. Look at the Z alloy with the wedges.
The Z alloys. I mean,
they went and made a new alloy just for wedges, just for golf. Yeah,
that's crazy. It was a happy accident that it doesn't rust, which obviously I'm thrilled about.
Sad accident for me.
Yeah, but. You know, exploring the different types of metals is really interesting. You mentioned Mizuno, and I think anyone who's a Mizuno purist will immediately say, well, grain flow forging is the greatest thing on planet Earth. But what I've always really enjoyed about this, and what I love hearing from the companies, is how they go about solving a similar complex problem to everyone else. I think it's a combination of execution and material and a willingness to set the bar or pay the price or push the envelope where you can. And if we're looking at this most simplified terms, it's you take a block of steel and let's go like in the most simplified way, you take a block of steel and smash it and try and create what's called a muscle back iron. It's basically just a piece of steel, and you get to decide where that weight goes and where the material goes behind the center of contact and the willingness to go back and look at every company who's created one over the last 20 years and pay attention to where they move the mass behind the head. And I'm not talking about a cavity back iron or, you know, something with a crap ton of technology built into it, which is super cool. Anyway, look at the way they manipulate the material behind their muscle backs, and you can tell that they are trying to tell you a story based on the quality of the contact, but on the razor's edge of where it supports the player without losing the feel.
Yep. And I think that's, you say story, and to me, that's the biggest thing about this with Strixon. All these companies, these major companies that produce high-level forged irons have massive, massive attention to details like that and looking for solutions to problems that none of the other ones think of the solution the same way. I think, and I have to like really applaud Cleveland and Strixon this year for putting the stories out there. It's after release, right? Which is even more interesting, which I'm like, man, this was like upon initial release, like this, if you hammer it, then that's a whole other thing, but it kind of creates this trickle effect. But like for them to put out what they're doing, like not just that they made a new alloy for wedges, but like how they came about it, not just that they're using condensed forging now, but how they came about it and what the problem was they were answering by doing this. I think that is the coolest thing that some of these companies can do. And I think Strixon has found something to kind of cling to. And I mean, you know me, I'm a story nerd too. And like, these are the stories I think that just are the most interesting thing ever. Whenever it comes to designing irons, especially because when you're talking about a true forged and you say MB, I'll even go to like a true player CB, right? The mass is still, it's still the same thing. It's still this attention to this, this most finite placement of stuff, because you're only working with what you have. You're not putting dampeners in. You're not creating giant undercuts and all these other things. You're not injecting material in the back of it. Like, this is these companies flexing their old school and at the same time, new school muscles as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really neat. I get so stuck on it because the one of the things that drives me nuts that people say is, oh, it's just all marketing hype. I'm like, you know what? There is truth in that you want to make new technologies or a new concept sound sexy as hell to the guy who's going to go spend over $1,000 on a set of irons or something like that. That there is complete and utter truth to that. Mm-hmm. But to say it's all just marketing nonsense is so devalued to the reality that that these guys go to the nth degree to try and save you an extra couple grams here or there in your irons. So the next time you hit that toey piece of garbage shot, it might fly 3 yards further. I mean, that's not nothing. And I think people need to start respecting that is there is a lot that goes into this. And when there is a great story to tell, like Z Alloy or like Condensed Forging, I think we all owe them a little bit of time to sit back and be like, all right, I'll listen. Tell me why. And if you're convincing enough, I'll go hit them. And when I did, I was like, oh shit, these actually are quite impressive.
And I think it's a big disservice to the people who are designing these things. And I know they're designing them 3 and 4 years ahead of time and the work that goes into it all. And we know that that's reality. And yeah, the marketing crew loves when something like that comes out that they can really put a spin and tell. I think the way Shrixon's going about it now is the way that going forward, you're going to see more companies do it, because it also, it kind of shuts down all the fly-by-night, buy them out of a catalog, stamp your name on them irons that we're starting to see.
Yeah.
That have, they, and they were at one point innovated by someone, but there is no level of innovation or marketing. And so you want to talk about just being marketing. I mean, to me, slapping a bunch of YouTubers on your irons and putting them out there, that's just, that's lazy marketing more than anything else. Well, I had to get that shot in before we go, but
yeah, it's incremental. But it's absolutely present, and definitely go read James' piece on it. I'm going to go on the forum and bump it before this episode goes live so we can get talking about it again. You'll see it there on the hot topics list. It's definitely worth reading, or just go straight to the THB homepage. I don't really care how you get there, but James, we're not done, man. I've got, I need one more interesting point of discussion from you today.
Oh Lord.
And I've got a pretty good one. So I got a fitting at TPI, the Titleist Performance Institute. And here's where it gets a little scary. And we've already kind of touched on my perspective on it. We've absolutely talked about it in the past. You know, I'm a complete and utter sicko. I got fit into a Wedgeworks grind, the K-Star. And unbeknownst to me, and Brandon, if you're listening to this, some, for whatever reason, my fitter, you are a sicko for making this happen. He goes, as we're going to establish our grinds and our setup, he goes, oh, just so you know, that only comes in raw. And I'm like, you can see like the blood drain from my face. I'm just like, oh God. Cause what that means, friends, if you're not familiar, raw means rust. And unless you're a Z Alloy product, raw means rust. And that to me is an absolute nightmare. So James, I got fit into K-Star, which is a really freaking cool grind. And I really enjoyed not only talking to Bob Vokey a little bit about it, who sat down with TH Peers and shared some experiences with them. But I really enjoyed the part of playing guess the grind with Brandon, and figuring something out from a fitting perspective that I didn't know what was underneath my club until I hit the ball and said, I like that way that feels, or I hate the way that feels. And by the time we were done, we were starting to argue with my current M grind, which was pissing me off a little bit. but I mean, what can you do? So long story short, I have a rustable wedge in my bag in the 58 degree. What do you think about that?
I'm so happy right now. I cannot wait for you, because you're going to wear the grooves off of it with steel wool after every round, trying to keep the rust from happening.
It's been humid as shit here in Ohio, and I took it out in the first day, and within five holes, you could see the little dots showing up by the toe. I'm like, oh no. The worst part about it, buddy, is I really like it. I was in the heather greenside on the 11th hole, and we just got rained on. So fortunately for me, it was easier to get my club through the ball. I hit it long. I was in the heather, but it's like greenside long. So I had this impossible to hit shot that I pretty much had to hit the ball higher up than I did forward to land it on the fringe to roll out. And I chipped it in. It's like,
that's about right.
My friends are looking at me like, what the hell just happened? I'm looking at me like, what the hell just happened? And I'm just laughing because I've already got a great story in this wedge, and it didn't really have anything to do with a grind. It was just, you know, Vokey being Vokey. But yeah, it's been a great experience so far. Have you hit K-Star?
I've not hit the K-Star. I've hit the other versions, the K.
Yeah,
I've got to mess around with those. So
it's just terrifying. Whenever
following around, whenever you guys were out there doing that, it started like coming through. It was like, oh shit, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
because it is a really cool one. I the only thing I would tell you about the rust is, like, you play so much golf, the face is going to stay pretty clean. That's what people lose sight of, is like the face is not going to get all rusted over. It's not gonna look like when you pull it out of the bag, like you need a tetanus shot. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not going to let it happen.
But if you're going to chip in, well, I have no doubt you're going to be like spraying you have silicone spray and all kinds of stuff that you can work with. But like, if it works, butter? It works. It is putter butter. That is, yes, it's silicone spray. It's putter butter. No, dude, like, that's freaking cool. Like, you have to play that.
Well, and that's kind of the fun part, is this willingness to like accept that. So we went through the entire gamut, and again, I didn't know what I was hitting. Mm-hmm. He'd hand me a wedge, I'd hit it. We talked through my experiences with it, and we landed on that. We were messing around with the T grind in a four bounce, which was pretty wild. We went back to the M grind, which I just have a little bit too much turf interaction with it in a negative way. So this K-Star that has this really ground out front side, but then it also has a ground out heel, or I guess heel and toe.
It's got a little bit of heel trailing edge.
So it's leading edge and trailing edge with a ton of support in between if I just want to hit a little touch shot around the green. And considering how much I use my 58, it's like the best of both worlds. So yeah, what an experience that was. I just thought you'd get a kick out of me being.
Oh yeah, it's one of the rust moments now, of my golfing career. You have a rustable wedge in your bag.
I will tell you, the other ones were not rustable, which I admit I kind of regret. But you know, one thing at a time here. Okay,
it's a step. It's a baby step.
It's a big baby step. You watch Happy Gilmore 2 yet?
I have.
And? What'd you think?
I think it's exactly what it needed to be.
Okay.
I saw a comment, I don't know if it was on our forum or whatever else it was, and they said that it was like 100 TikToks strung together. Yeah. And I think it is the perfect analogy for what it is. But like cut out all this. It's not as good as the original. Nobody's trying to be as good as the original. It's supposed to be slapstick funny and a good time. And it was that. I mean, we got to see, I don't want to talk about Rory's nipples being pinched and everything with Bryson defending him and Scottie Scheffler. If anybody tells me Scottie Scheffler has no personality ever again,
oh, he's pretty electric.
I'm going to point them to this. And it was good. It was what it needed to be.
What do you think about the fan asking John Rahm what it's like to play in the Maxi League?
I don't know. I think it's pretty funny. I think it's pretty funny. Like,
I couldn't tell if they're making fun of TGL or Liv or holy moly. I really couldn't figure it out. Man, what what a goofy way of going about it. I think there was the cameos are what did it for me. Will Zalatoris leaning into it did it for me.
That's the best. Yeah.
When he peeks around the corner, he goes, "You son of a bitch." It's just just great stuff from those guys. Seeing a little personality come out. That did everything for me. I hated the Maxi League stuff, but doesn't really matter. It's not why we watch it. So
nope, that's not.
We'll be all right. I'm tired, dude. I'm going to bed. I'm glad we could do this. We've got lots to talk about on the forum this week. If you do want to have a post listen discussion, we'll be on there talking about it. There will be a thread over there, and it's a community full of golfers who are probably more like you than you could possibly imagine. So if you're not familiar with the forum, come check us out there. James, you are found on the homepage and on the forum, depending on where you want to
allegedly
engage with you. Or not engage with you, just yell at you in review of reviews. So either way, thanks, buddy. Thanks for coming on last minute.
Anytime, good times. My guy. Anytime.
Yeah. Hey, everyone out there, if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. And be nice to your superintendent. I assure you they're doing what they can. I'm trying to support mine as best as we can through this weirdo time. I can't wait for 80 degrees, dude. I'm pumped. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, students. Professor Don back here at Shaft University answering another one of your questions. This week's question is about how our new Project X Red compares to our Elevate or our Project X LZ shafts from the past. So let's start with the LZ. The LZ shaft is much heavier, so if you're looking at a 6.0 in that product, you're looking at about 120 grams versus 110 grams in the Project X Red. PX Red's also going to launch a little bit higher than the LZ. The LZ, while having that soft midsection, was really more of a mid to low flight shaft. The Red's going to launch a little bit higher than that. Compared to the Elevate's actually a little bit on the lighter side, usually about 95 grams in a stiff, really designed for those players with a little bit slower swing speed, still want to be in steel, but need lighter weight and also looking to really elevate that ball flight, hence the name Elevate. The PX Red's gonna actually fly a little bit lower than that, more mid, and is gonna be a little bit heavier. So really, if you're looking at those three products, you got Elevate being the highest, then the PX Red, and then the LZ. Hope that helps you out. Let me know if you have any more questions. Talk to you guys next time.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.